Traitors!
Kip's head snapped toward Karis. Imperious, masterful.
What the hell is she doing?
Karis grabbed a musket and powder horn and began reloading it, as if she were a simple soldier. When Kip saw the looks on the faces on the soldiers near them, he finally understood. They'd just seen her and Kip fight Mirror Men, but none of the surrounding men knew who was fighting on which side or if they should interfere. It looked like these soldiers had lost all of their officers. Not surprising, since the defenders on the wall would try to kill officers first. That was probably the only reason Kip and Karis were still alive.
Well, Drafter?
Karis was as fast at reloading as she was at everything. Her skin was the color of blood. Her eyes were no longer capped with the violet eye caps that kept her from drafting. Wait, had he done that? Kip was feeling shaky, drained. Her bluff had worked, though. The soldiers were turning back to the fighting, determined not to get in the way of this virago.
Kip, ordinarily this is a bad idea when you're as new as you are, but I want you to draft more green. I need you with me.
Kip was staring at the smear of head on the ground. The soldiers pushing toward the gate were trampling right over the pieces of brain and bone, giving more room to the two drafters than they did to the men Kip had killed.
Kip! Cry later, be a man now!
The red diamonds in her emerald eyes blazed. She cast about for a moment, looking for something. Then a few threads of green wove their way from her eyes to her fingertips, through the ocean of red that colored her pale skin, and she drafted something small in her hands. Spectacles. Spectacles entirely of green Luxon. She put them on Kip's face, adjusted them, did something to seal them, and then stepped away.
Now draft!
Kip was a sponge. It was like going outside on a hot day, closing his eyes, and basking in the heat. Everywhere he looked, there were light-colored surfaces, homes and shops whitewashed against the sun, and every one of them gave him magic. He soaked it in, feeling potent, free. The throbbing in his burnt hand faded to nothing. He joined the stream of soldiers heading toward the gap in the wall. It was turning into a glorious morning, bright, crisp, slowly burning off the mist. It would be hot soon. Where before, when he was unmoving, the stream of men had parted around him like a boulder as they saw that he was a drafter. As soon as he joined the stream, he was jostled about just like everyone else. The lines compressed the closer they got to the wall, and men trying to stay with their units pushed hard. As it got tighter and tighter, more and more constrained, Kip started to rebel against it. He wasn't sure how much of the agitation was his and how much was the Green Luxon's influence on him, but he could tell that there was more to his reaction than his own psyche. With a confluence of horses and men in armor, though only a small fraction of King Harald's army was armored or uniformed, those soldiers were intent on going in first, Kip lost sight of King Harald himself. Karis had slipped into the line in front of Kip, and she was using her slender form and muscles to slip in between rows and push forward. Kip soon lost sight of her, too. It was all he could do to keep on his feet as the crowd packed tight together right at the wall.
You!
Kip looked. A horseman 10 paces away was staring at him.
You! You're not one of us!
At first, Kip had no idea who the man was. He thought maybe it was one of the soldiers who'd escorted him with Simon after Kip had blown up the fire. But even that was only a guess. Unfortunately, it didn't matter. The man recognized him. The officer tugged at his musket, trying to pull it from the saddle sleeve, but there were other horses pressing in on either side of him, and it was stuck.
Spy! Traitor! He doesn't have the sleeves! He's not one of us! Murderer! Spy! That green drafter is a spy!
Kip had been pushed up the rubble pile to the gap in the wall itself. It put him at a high point. Everyone was able to see him. The officer finally pulled his musket free and kicked his horse savagely to come after Kip. Turned backward, looking at the man, not really believing he would fire into a crowd of his compatriots, Kip lifted his hands to draft something, anything. His foot slid on the rubble, and the surging crowd, some pulling away, some reaching toward him, threw him off balance. He went down in stages. The people were packed so tight that he didn't fall all at once. But neither could he stop himself once he started. The gap in the wall vomited them into Garriston. Kip fell and rolled. Someone stepped on his burned left hand. Feet were hitting his sides. Someone tripped over him. Someone stepped on his belly. Someone kicked the side of his head. He tumbled, rolling down the slight hill of rubble, tried to gain his feet, and got smacked with the stock of a musket. He ended up on his back, head ringing, left hand on fire with pain, eyes having trouble focusing. Without meaning to, he'd gone turtle again, as he had when Mistress Hellel had tried to kill him. And again, he was about as effective as a turtle on its back. It was like the world knew Kip needed to take the coward's way, and it conspired together to land him here. The next thing he knew, there were people on every side of him, kicking, kicking. Some were trying to slam musket butts down on him, but there were so many people packed in so tightly around him that he only felt a few glancing blows on his legs. Back in the old days, he would have rolled over on his stomach and buried his head in his hands, rolled into a ball and waited until Ram had asserted his superiority again and tired of the game and left him. Doing that here would be death.
Do you expect me to take a little whipping lying down?
Yes, Kip, it's your way.
Did you expect me to die lying down?
Face it, Kip, you're not much of a fighter, not when it matters. Why don't you curl up in a ball and quit?
Part of him expected Karis to save him. She was a fighter, a warrior, a drafter. She was quick and decisive, nimble and deadly, with magic or blade. The crowd was like a beast, a seething, teeming, roaring mass that had lost all individuality. And Kip hated it. He ducked his head as someone tried to stomp on him. He saw leering faces, brief images of snarling mouths, visages twisted with hatred. Part of him expected Iron Fist to save him. The man had swept in out of nowhere twice before and done that. Iron Fist was huge, strong, intimidating. He was as quiet and as unmoving as steel. A guardian. Part of Kip expected Liv to save him. Why not? She'd come in at the last minute to save him from the assassin Mistress Hellel. Part of him expected Gavin to save him. What good was a prism if he couldn't save his own bastard? Gavin was here, somewhere. He had to be close. He had to know the wall had been breached. He had to be hurrying here, even now. A kick caught him in the kidney, sending lances of pain through his whole body. As Kip lurched, a fist caught him in the face. His head bounced off the stones. Blood shot out of his nose, drenching his mouth and chin. No one was coming. Like when his mother had locked him in a cupboard when he was 8 years old because he'd complained or talked too much or... He didn't even remember what he'd done wrong. He just remembered the look of disgust on her face. She despised him. She threw his soup at him and locked the door. He went out to get high and forgot about him. Because he was worthless.
No one's coming, Kip. You always were a disappointment. A failure. You're not good at anything.
Enough! Enough!
The officer finally pushed through the crowd, carrying his musket.
Move back!
He hefted the musket, pointing it at Kip's head.
What can I do? Draft little green balls?
Fine!
Kip drafted a green ball and threw it up into the yawning barrel. Willed it to stay. The officer pulled the trigger. Kip saw steel being drawn on all sides, flashes of the sun on blades. He was laughing because he was good at something. He was good at taking punishment. He was a turtle, or maybe a bear. He slapped his hands to his shoulders as he lay on the ground. Green Luxon jetted out, covering him like he'd seen it cover the green white back in Redden. As Kip watched, a sword descended and hacked into the green Luxon over his arm. It cut in 2 fingers' breadths, but the Luxon was thicker. It stopped, quivering like an axe in wood. Kip flipped over, pulling in more green from every light surface, not even knowing how he did it. Pulling and pulling, drafting light from Orholm's endless tank. It filled him with that same wildness. Wildness chained, hemmed in, trapped. The Luxon covering him grew thicker. Kip gathered his feet beneath himself and stood. He smashed a green forearm into a wide-eyed man holding a sword. It flung the man back. Kip paused for a second, and spikes sprouted from his green armor everywhere. He threw his weight back and forth, crashing into the crowd like they were rats, to smash against covered walls. Blood was flying in red ropes. Kip wasn't human anymore. He was an animal, unwilling to be caged. He was a mad dog. Some dim thinking part of him thought that he shouldn't have been able to move so well with such a heavy suit on him. He was strong, but not this strong. He had no sense of the battle beyond the little circle around him. Even that was a blur. Sharp motions to the left and right, gleams of light off blades, and rising muskets to be crushed before they could fire. He slashed and hacked and pounded with unreasoning fury. He could hold only one thought.
I will not be stopped!
In moments or hours, Kip had no notion of time, he saw fear in every eye. A continual flood of men spilled in through the gap, thrust forth hard by the massive bodies behind them, all pushing them forward and into Kip. But his very presence was slowing the flood, men pushing back as soon as they saw him, others leaping to the sides, hoping to avoid his fury. Their weakness inflamed him further. Like rats willing to bite in the darkness, but scattering in the light, they were cowards. He clubbed them, smashing heads, ripping open bellies. Charged the gap where they couldn't flee, impaled them, flung gore left and right. A thought went through his brain. Among all the shouting and screams and fear and mist and musket fire and clash of arms, someone was screaming a word.
Kip! Kip! King Haradul, that way!
King Haradul was rallying his mirror men around him there, pulling them together after they'd been separated coming through the gap. He seemed furious about something. He hadn't seen Kip. Before he even knew what he was doing, Kip was charging. All his will focused, intent, implacable. This one thing remained. King Haradul had to pay for what he'd done. He had to die. When Gavin heard the explosion, he knew immediately what it was. He was almost back to the wall on his way from the docks, where he'd been using the first light to help draft boats for the refugees. The evacuation was entirely possible if people would be reasonable. Gavin had told the city's elders that nobles could bring 3 chests, armorers and apothecaries could bring 3 as well, rich merchants could bring 2, and everyone else could only bring what they could carry. It was a simple rationale, if a hard one. The fleeing Tyrians would need medicine, and they didn't want to leave any arms that King Haradul could use to arm his troops and spread his aggression. And though it stuck in Gavin's throat to help the rich more than the rich would bring their riches out of the city. Those riches, if left, would again be used by King Haradul and would help him kill others. If people did everything according to orders, there would still be room for everyone to escape who wanted to. Except, of course, everyone cheated. Everyone. Nobles brought 6 chests. Rich merchants brought 5. Others lied and claimed to be armorers or apothecaries who were not. Gavin put a local guild head in charge, went to draft on the barges, and when he came back, found the man letting his own guild members bring extra baggage. Gavin drafted a scaffold off the side of the pier in 5 seconds and had the man strangling on it in 10. He put someone else in charge before the first man was dead.
Make decisions fast and as justly as you can, and my whole authority is behind you even if you make mistakes. Take one bribe, and I'll take my time making your death as much worse than this as I can imagine.
Then he left. He was at the base of the wall when he heard the explosion. It was exactly what he'd been afraid of. It had been why he drafted Brightwater Wall in the first place. With all the homes and shops built directly against the city wall, it was hard to defend from enemies outside, but impossible to defend from enemies within. Anyone who owned a shop could be given barrels of black powder, tunnel under the wall a little bit, and set a charge. They could work in full privacy uninterrupted. Could and had. Blackguards in tow, Gavin dug his heels into his horse's flanks. But he didn't head for the gap. A hole in the wall was a prize, of course, but it would immediately attract defenders, and it might not be big enough for the army to come through. It might become a choke point, a killing zone. Better to use the distraction of a breach in the walls to open a gate elsewhere. Gavin dispatched messengers to the Hag's Gate and the Lover's Gate and headed toward the Mother's Gate. At the top of the wall, he ran into General Corvin Danibus with his entourage. Doubtless, Corvin was going to direct the defense of the breach in the wall personally.
They're holding back their drafters and Cullowites. I don't know why, but if we lose a gate in the next 20 minutes, we won't make it until noon.
If it falls, be at the ships an hour before noon.
Corvin nodded his head. No fighting to the death. Gavin clapped Corvin's shoulder. Then, the general was gone. At the top of the gate, Gavin looked over the teeming mass on the other side. The army pushed forward like a blind beast, black fingertips reaching up to grab the wall. Many of the homes outside the wall had been demolished in just a few hours, but of those that remained, the army had found which places were easiest to scale. At half a dozen places, a slow trickle of men were clambering up onto the wall itself and engaging the few defenders. Farther out, King Harald's men were setting up their mortars. Too late, really. There was no point in them bombarding the city at all. And doing so now would probably kill as many of their own as it would kill defenders. Nonetheless, they were already loading the mortars. Gavin had found that lots of men liked to be safe from the fighting, but they wanted to be able to say they'd taken part. Those idiots would fire some rounds, and later brag how they turned the battle.
Good to see that King Haradul's got discipline problems too.
And where was the king? From the gate's highest point, looking back into the city, Gavin spied him, despite the mists. King Haradul had pressed into the city himself.
Idiot.
Sure, Gavin had done the same more than once, but he was armed like few others. Gavin's presence on a battlefield wasn't simple morale boosting. King Haradul was leading the attack, surrounded by perhaps 100 mirror men. As Gavin caught sight of him, he saw the king yelling at some messenger, gesticulating angrily.
He wants his drafters. Why isn't he getting them?
Gavin moved to the front of the Mother Spear, stared out to the hill some 500 paces away. On the crown of the hill, there were banners and a crowd. He drafted lenses, adjusted the distance necessary between the two to get the focus right, and studied the image above the low-hanging mists. A multicolored man was lifting a musket, pointing it right at him. Insanity. No musket could fire so. The musket fired. A huge charge from the cloud of black smoke. He continued to study the man. He drafted the two lenses together to keep the focus steady. A polychrome white. Probably a full polychrome, or at least pretending to be one from all the colors he drafted into his own body. Curious. The man was studying him, too. Around Lord Omnichrome, there were not just the usual complement of generals and lackeys, but dozens of drafters. They were clearly not going anywhere. Someone handed the musket back to Lord Omnichrome. Lord Omnichrome took the musket, aimed quickly, and fired. A second later, something hit the Mother Spear 2 paces above Gavin's head and exploded, taking a chunk out of the rock.
Luxon projectiles? From 500 paces?
Gavin was still thinking about it as the blackguards pulled him away into the back of the spear. Lord Omnichrome wanted King Haradul dead. So simple, so bold. He probably had even egged on King Haradul at Brightwater Wall, daring him to be a Promakos, getting the young king to lead from the front, hoping he'd get killed.
If your enemy wants it, deny it.
Gavin drafted a small yellow tablet, making it read,
"Capture Haradul, not kill, at all costs."
He covered it in blue and liquid yellow Luxon, and shot it into the path where he believed Corvin was going. But Gavin's intuition told him the main strike was going to happen elsewhere, while the defenders focused their efforts here.
To the Hag's Gate! We run!
Kara snatched a second sword from a man lying on the ground, bleeding from a stomach wound. She didn't know what side he was fighting for. She didn't care. The city smelled of gunpowder, sewage, and men's sweat. The kind of stench that gets into leather armor and never comes out. As she ran, she drafted a thin sheen of green Luxon down the swords, sealed it, then ran red Luxon on top of that, and sealed that too. This entire area was a tangle of alleys. The buildings were thrown down haphazardly with seeming intent to vex one's neighbors and make straight lines of sight impossible. The good news was that it made it impossible for King Haradul to rally his men in any numbers here. The bad news was that...
Oh, shit!
Karras rounded a corner and almost ran into three mirror men, who were lost, peering down different alleys and looking like they were about to start arguing which way to go. Karras careened into them before any of them could react. She threw her weight into the smallest one, catching him flat-footed. She spun, left sword swinging in a red arc. The second mirrorman was moving his sword into guard position, but too slowly, with no leverage. Her blade beat right through his and cut into his neck above his gorget. Between colliding with the first mirrorman and cutting the second, Karras had lost sight of the last one. She spun around, ducking, blocking with both swords, left down, right up, in a reversed grip. She came up cutting, but the mirrorman blocked her strike. Then his eyes went wide. A low red flush of light washed them both. His sword had struck sparks off of hers, setting the red Luxon aflame. She'd intended the flames for later, but it worked as well for now. Karras swung her right-hand flaming sword in a quick arc and stabbed the mirrorman in the face with her left. She kicked him off her blade in a spray of broken teeth and exhaled blood, spun again, and saw the mirrorman she'd collided with and sent sprawling, crawling for his blade. She stomped on his hand as he lunged for it and punched her blade through the mirror armor. Pulling the blade free again, she quickly wiped the last of the flaming red Luxon off the sword with one of the men's cloaks and reapplied the red Luxon. She'd set herself alight if she wasn't careful. She lifted a sturdy bow and a half-empty quiver from one of the dead. Now where the hell was she? And where was Kip? Karras had taken a shortcut. She knew there was a market on the south side of the city, and she thought she remembered roughly where it was. She'd pointed Kip after King Haradol, hoping he would wreak some havoc by following, which would allow her to circle behind the king and kill him. Maybe it had been a bad choice. Or Holum, she'd abandoned Kip, a baby drafter. Not that she could have done much to help him. At the Chromeria, they called what Kip had done going green golem. At one time, they had taught it as a war magic. No longer. There were three problems with going green golem. First, you couldn't seal the green Luxon. If you did, you couldn't move. Some drafters got around that by making big sealed plates and just holding the joints in open green. What Kip was doing was much harder. He was holding all the magic at once. It took enormous focus, and the armor was only as hard as his will. If someone broke his focus, he'd lose his armor instantly. Second, using that much green Luxon burned out drafters fast. In the False Prisms War, Karras had heard of green drafters breaking the halo after going green golem only three or four times. Third, you had to be strong as a bull. The suit, the armor, the golem, whatever it was, had weight. For the drafter, it was less because their will took part of the weight, but they still had to move an enormous hunk of Luxon. That said, using open green in the legs did mean that a skilled user could make enormous bounds, and once they got moving, they were nearly impossible to stop. It all meant that Kip was more likely to get himself killed than anything, and Karras had abandoned him. Damn it. What kind of woman abandons a child? Karras double-checked the position of the sun from the shadows. The sun was still low in the sky, and these alleys were swaddled in shadows and mist. As she looked up, she was struck by it. The rooftops rose from the mists like distant square mountain peaks raining over the clouds. Then she saw the retreat flares. It was the color Gavin or the Blackguards were supposed to use, and she was sure that was how he was using them now. But retreat to where?
The docks.
They knew they were going to lose the city. They were just trying to make King Haradol pay as heavy a price as possible. Karras didn't have much time to make sure that price was the ultimate price. She ran into an empty house. She was pretty sure all the houses were empty here. Pushing past the leavings of chickens and several dogs and one live skinny cow, lots of people brought their animals inside during the night, both for safety and to warm the house, she found the stairs, ran up to the family's quarters, which had been hurriedly emptied, and found the ladder to the roof. The square squat houses of Garriston all have these flat roofs. The roof became a third room for most families, a perfect place to cool down on the hot long summer evenings. The commoner's only chance of catching a breeze off the Cerulean Sea. The buildings were packed tight, but by no means uniform. Not every building was three stories, and even of the many that were, the stories were different heights. All the same, as Karras reached the roof, farther south she could just see Brightwater Wall, like a golden belt around the city. Nearer, there was black smoke rising from the city wall, flashes of magic from the gates. She shut it out, found the market she'd been heading for. With the mist, she couldn't see enough to tell if her guess had been correct.
You've already bet Kip's life on this course. Might as well see if it pays off.
Karis drafted a green weapon harness, sheathed both blades in her back, messed with the harness for a second to get it to set right with a quiver and bow, cursed the torn tight sleeves on her dress, cursed her muscular shoulders, and tore the sleeves off. Then, she sprinted to the edge of the roof and leapt. The houses here were so close, it was an easy jump. Some homes even had planks between them so neighbors could visit each other. So long as she didn't want to cross the street, it was easy going. She ran as fast as she could, one street to clear, then another block of houses, then the market. Her eyes bounced back and forth as she approached the larger gap of crossing the street. There. One of the houses on the other side had a significantly lower roof. Karis veered left and leapt, passing over the heads of 30 or 40 mirror men. She hit the lower roof, rolled, popped to her feet, just in time to have to leap again, to a higher roof. She hit the next roof with one foot extended. She pushed up, trying to push herself just a little higher, but not stop her forward momentum. Her body popped up, but not forward enough. She landed with half of her torso on flat, whitewashed stucco, then slid down, scrambling, trying to find purchase. She dropped to her fingertips on dirty, cracked, crumbling stucco. She swung sideways, lost one handhold for a second as the stucco ripped away. She latched her hand back onto the roof, a clean grip this time, and swung back the other way. Her foot reached the edge, tearing the slit of her dress up even higher. She pulled herself up quickly. Not trusting that the rest of the stucco wouldn't crumble at any moment, Karis checked her swords and bow, then she ran again. She reached a roof overlooking the market and stopped. King Haradal was coming, with hundreds of mirror men and a few drafters, and Kip was hot on their heels. Literally. This was going to get messy. Karis smiled. Kip was on fire. Someone had doused him in red Luxon and lit him up. It didn't stop him. He simply thickened the green that encased him so the red wouldn't burn through. The pyre jelly stuck to the green. He couldn't rub it away from his face. It was glued in place, implacable. But he could move the green Luxon itself, so he made it swirl outward until his eyes were clear and he could see again. The wildness within him was so strong that he wanted to break free of the city and run away, but he wouldn't allow it. He harnessed the wildness. The wildness would serve him. It would help him destroy the man who held the lash and the leash, the man who wanted to control him, King Haradal. Kip wasn't sure that he was going the right way, but he followed the flow of King Haradal's soldiers. Kip himself was like a beacon, burning as he was in the misty morning. But the light made his vision lousy. It was like holding a torch. If you held it over your head, you might see into the darkness. But if you held it between yourself and the darkness, you weren't going to see anything at all. Kip was the torch. He couldn't see much, and he didn't care. He could see the men streaming away from him, some of them seeing him and just running like hell. But others seemed to be running towards something. A meeting place, a rallying point, where King Haradal would be. Kip barreled around a corner into the backs of half a dozen soldiers. They hadn't seen him, and he couldn't stop. He ran right over them in a mess of burning flesh and blood, and a struggle just to keep from falling as he stepped onto body parts. He swung his arms in big, sweeping motions, file and blood and blades unleashed into a crowd. And it was a crowd. Kip had made it. There were hundreds of soldiers here. He could see dim flashes of the winking armor of the mirror men on the other side of the square. Then he was subsumed, folded into the loving arms of battle. There was no morning mist, no counting of his foes, no deciphering the shouts of his enemies into plain language, orders that might help him know what was coming. There was only the roar coming from Kip's own throat, the hammering of his own heart, the pulsing life that was his magic. There was only the burning in his muscles, the resistance his arm felt as the bladed arm cut into a man's torso, and the freedom as he pulled it all the way through. The world closed in on Kip, He could barely see, barely turn his neck within the green armor. It drove him crazy. He needed freedom. He couldn't be tracked. He was an animal. He crashed through ranks of soldiers as they formed against him. His sweeping arms snapped spears like nothing. He bludgeoned heads with his closed fists, tore men off his back, and snapped their spines in his hands. Then, abruptly, the ranks parted in front of him, and Kip saw two rows of 10 musketeers each. The first row was kneeling, the second row standing, all muskets pointed at him.
Fire!
The musket balls hit him like a fist, many striking at the same time, and a few instants behind the first, carrying him like a punch's follow-through. He was swept off his feet. Kip's head swam, and he felt the green Luxon going soft all around him.
No! I can take punishment! That's my gift! That's my talent!
A musketeer ran over to Kip and pointed a blunderbuss at his head. Kip grabbed the yawning mouth of the blunderbuss and pulled it to himself, stuck it right to his forehead, and pressed green Luxon down the barrel. Ah! The man pulled the trigger. Kip jumped to his feet with inhuman strength. He looked at himself. He could see the lead musket balls flattened inside his green armor, like they'd shot a tree. The bullets had penetrated, but been stopped. He was bulletproof. Ignoring the musketeers, several of whom were running away while the rest were reloading furiously, fumbling with their ramrods and powder horns, trying to ready another shot, Kip looked for King Haradol. These men were no threat. They couldn't bind him. But he couldn't see, so he pulled Green Luxon around him and made himself taller. Simple. And there he was. Surrounded by his mirrormen, King Haradol was mounted, shouting at a drafter beside him, pointing at Kip. The drafter's skin was bright blue, but even as she gathered her magic, something streaked out of the sky. The woman's hands opened limply, and blue poured out of her. Puddled on the ground, she toppled out of her saddle. King Haradol stopped in mid-sentence, looked around. The drafter on his other side, a red, fell out of her saddle. This time, Kip and all the mirrormen followed the arrow's path back to its source. Up on a rooftop, Karis, skinny, muscular, bloody, wearing a torn dress and already drawing another arrow. One of the mirrormen tackled King Haradol out of his saddle. Karis's third arrow cracked the mirrorman's greave and pinned his leg into his horse. The stallion went crazy, bolting, knocking down half a dozen men and trampling them, before it tripped and rolled over on the mirrorman. Kip ignored the havoc. He had his target now. He could feel his strength ebbing. He had to do this now. There would be no second chance. He bowled forward, men and women dodging out of his way, slowly reaching full speed. If this was insanity, so be it. He collided with the first ranks of mirrormen before they had all recovered from looking for Karis. He smashed left and right, but even as he crushed men, his armor was disintegrating. He was hacking parts of himself off with every blow he inflicted. The mirrormen, recovering, formed up behind the front row. Kip burst through the row and found himself staring at dozens of pistols. It knocked him back once more, even though he had braced himself. He felt hot lines against his skin. The Luxon was thinner now. Some of the shots must have gotten through.
I will not fail. Not now. Not so close. Damn it, where's the king?
Kip lashed out at the nearest mirrorman, shooting a ball of green Luxon at the man. It hit the mirrorman's chest and split in half. Gobs of green Luxon flying off in either direction, leaving no more damage than if Kip had thumped the man's chest lightly with his fist. The rest of the mirrormen dropped their muskets and drew sharp, mirror-bright swords as one. Kip was looking at his chest, studded with those flattened musket balls suspended in green Luxon, some of them surrounded by blood where they had cut him. He was drawing in more Luxon to replenish his armor, and he saw the little balls swirling around like little boats under a waterfall.
Luxon doesn't hurt. How about lead?
Kip drew one of the lead balls up from his chest into his hand. He extended his hand and with all his will shot out a tiny ball of green Luxon carrying the musket ball. A
little hole lined in green goo appeared in one of the Mirrorman's chest plates. His mirror armor cracked in splintery, spidery lines around the hole, and then crimson blood joined the Emerald Luxon, and he toppled backwards. It was like Orholim had breathed new life into Kip. He was exhausted, broken, elated, and free. Totally insane. Totally unstoppable. Lead bullets swirled through his armor and into his palms, and he fired them like he was a musket himself. The weight of green armor, which had been so crippling before, now allowed him to shoot the little bullets so hard that if he had been doing it without the armor, it would have bowled him over. He shot everywhere. At each place, men died. Kip wasn't accurate in the least, but this close, he didn't need accuracy. He pointed at a chest and might hit a neck or a belly or someone else in the second rank. Either way, it killed. Ranks disappeared before him. He cut a gory path through the Mirrorman. He couldn't see King Holidol, but he figured that wherever the resistance was greatest was probably the right way. Nothing good is easy. Through the ranks of chaos, Kip saw a flash of something. Royal garments.
Haradual!
He burst through just as King Haradol was pulled up onto a platform at the back of the market square. His men were trying to hustle him down some narrow alley there. Kip bounded forward and found that his green Luxon legs bounced him much farther than he'd intended. He landed between King Haradol and the alley, crushing two of the king's men, including his last drafter. The ground was littered with dead drafters, but Kip didn't care how they died. He had eyes only for the king. King Haradol tripped over a body on the platform. In an instant, Kip was on top of him. He kicked at Kip. Kip brought a big fist down and broke the king's leg like kindling. Kip grabbed the king's head, latching big Luxon fists together on either side and lifting. The rattle of musket fire stopped. Kip was too close to the king. No one would dare.
You killed my mother!
You, Linos brat! She's not worthy of a vengeance and you know it!
Kip!
The king was trying to draw a beechwa from his belt. He was in too much pain.
Go to hell! You go to hell!
Kip lifted the king high and squeezed with all his strength and all his will.
Kip! Stop! This is just what Lord Omnicom wants!
Nothing could penetrate the madness, the sheer fury. Kip wasn't even sure whether it was more at this man for massacring his village or at his mother. He loved her. He hated her.
Kip! No! It's just what they wanted you to do!
Looking up, stunned, Kip saw Corvin Danibus, mounted at the head of perhaps 100 men, riding into the square. The invaders, already broken and leaderless without King Haradol, scattered at the sight of so many fresh soldiers. Kip heard a body fall behind him, and turned to see a Mirrorman with an arrow in his heart. Someone had saved him. Again. He hadn't even seen the man. Kip's brain was swimming. He felt like he was shrinking. He was standing on his own feet again. The green Luxon was gone. He tottered and felt someone steady him on his feet. Kip turned. Karras had come down from the roofs and was taking the beechwa from the king's body.
Karras?
He'd meant to save her, hadn't he? That turned out well. He looked at King Haradol's body and felt nothing but emptiness. When he looked up, Corvin Danibus was there.
Do you have any idea what you've just done?
Go to hell. He killed our whole town. He deserved worse.
Corvin stopped and looked at Kip with a new respect in his eyes. He didn't say anything for a moment.
Mount up! We have to get out of the city. Now!
But I killed him. Don't we win? Why do we have to go?
Look at that.
Karras was already mounted. She was pointing toward the wall. Lord Omnicrome stood on top of the Mother's Gate, perhaps 400 paces distant, and when he spoke through some trick of magic, they could hear him perfectly.
They've killed King Haradol!
Avenge the king! Drive out the foreigners!
The gate opened, revealing hundreds of drafters, hundreds, and dozens of color whites. They were followed by thousands more soldiers.
That's why!
Gavin's intuition was wrong. On arriving at the Hag's Gate, he'd become like a man trying to plug a leaky hole with his fingers and toes. He could only reach so far. He and the Blackguards had held the Hag's Gate alone, with no other support, against thousands of soldiers for 10 minutes now. At this point, he could hold it by simply standing here behind the bullet shield that his Blackguards had drafted in front of him. They weren't fighting him. Everywhere he went, the army facing him withdrew. If the city had only had one gate, that might have been helpful. But with three gates and a crumbling three-quarter circle for a wall, it was hopeless. No one would face him. They simply sent men around the sides and waited. If he held these men up for long, the armies would simply enter through the other gates. By this time, surely all the gates had fallen. So his enemy was canny. He wasn't wasting his men, throwing them against Gavin. Time would deliver the victory into his hands, so he was preserving his strength. No need to rush the victory. Send the men around Gavin and advance everywhere but where Gavin was. Then Gavin would either be rendered totally ineffectual, dashing from one place to another, fighting men who melted away, or he would become separated from the main body of his army, at which point Lord Omnichrome would throw away as many lives as he needed to kill him, or capture him. The campaigner in Gavin was furious. During the war, he would have gone for the throat. They wanted to melt in front of him. He would have gone for the king and killed him, and let the chips fall where they may. Doing such a thing would put him in the most peril possible, but he wouldn't have cared. Which is why fortune favors the young. If he got killed, the refugees wouldn't make it 2 leagues out of the harbor.
Damn!
Gavin drafted the retreat flares and shot them high into the sky.
Any news from the docks?
No, sir.
Gavin hadn't expected any messengers to be able to find him, but it still would have been nice.
Let's go!
A red Blackguard laid down a thick carpet of red Luxon across the broken opening of the gate and set fire to it as Gavin turned and started jogging. Odd running through an empty city. Almost everyone was simply gone, and there wasn't yet that air of abandonment and layer of dust that settled over cities soon after their inhabitants had left. Garriston was the kind of empty that happened when people left food burning on the fire and simply ran. The burnt smell hadn't even dissipated yet. In fact, they were lucky no one had burned the city down. Empty alleys, empty homes. Little potted flowers abandoned in windowsills and not yet withered.
Death will come for you too, little flower.
They made it to one of the bridges when the ambush was sprung. 2 dozen drafters and several color whites popped up from the roofs and began hurling magic. No hesitation, no warning. Of course. They'd circled Gavin to cut off the most obvious route out. The flat roofs gave them an excellent platform from which to attack, and the open area of the bridge made a perfect killing field. But the Blackguards were Blackguards. Every one of them knew his task, and how the tasks would shift depending on which of them were killed. They practiced for this. This is what they were. Shields of green Luxon, blue Luxon, and more green Luxon, 3 layers thick, enfolded Gavin. He knew exactly where they would land, and each shield had holes in it so that he could fight too. He stuck a hand outside of his shield and pointed at every one of the attackers he could see. He shot narrow tendrils of superviolet Luxon at them, sticking it to each drafter, leaving dangling ropes of superviolet. 2 of the Blackguards were superviolet blue bichromes. Their first action was to shield Gavin, second to shield themselves, and third, if possible, this. They could see Gavin's superviolet threads, and they drafted blue along those shining paths as they pulled grenades from the bandoliers. They hurled the grenades, which followed the arcing superviolet tracks unerringly. But the ambushers were moving too. 3 Blackguards went down in the first wave of fire missiles. In defending Gavin first, they couldn't fix their own shields in time. A gout of red Luxon jetted in from 4 sides, trying to drench the entire bridge so they could set it alight. Blue and green Blackguards threw up shields to divert the flows off the sides of the bridge, while a yellow threw light burst grenades at everyone she could see. Gavin looked forward and saw that the ambushers weren't blocking the way across the bridge. There was only one reason for that. They wanted Gavin and the Blackguard to flee headlong into something worse.
Let's move! Cross the bridge!
No!
Gavin pointed off the side of the bridge and drafted a new walkway in green from the middle span to a point 30 paces down. This Blackguard was a yellow. She launched a flash bomb a mere 10 paces into the air. Gavin and the Blackguards covered their faces. Then they ran across the new green bridge, even as the bridge behind them, no longer protected from the red Luxon streams, went up in flames. One of the blue whites dropped into the street in front of them as they made it back to land, determined to steer them back into the secondary ambush. A dozen Blackguard hands went up. And the beast was riddled with Luxon bullets and cudgeled aside instantly. A Blackguard fell, though Gavin hadn't seen what cut him down.
No! No!
His partner split away from them. The Blackguard who had fallen rolled over onto his back. His partner, a woman near 40, Leia, Gavin thought her name was, stood over him.
I'm sorry. Too much. Too much.
Leia pulled an eyelid up to get a good look at the fallen Blackguard's halo. She whispered something, kissed her fingers, touched them to the fallen man's eyes, mouth, and heart. Then, she cut his throat. The rest of the Blackguards didn't wait. They ran past an alley and found themselves looking at the backs of dozens of musketeers, all in formation, muskets up, pointed the other way where the ambush had originally tried to steer Gavin. The men were so intent on waiting for their quarry to appear in front of them that they didn't see Gavin behind them. As they ran past, Leia slopped Red Luxon over them. One more river crossing. This time, Gavin led the Blackguards to a blank section and drafted his own green span across. No need to risk another ambush. They made it to the docks and found hundreds of soldiers there, muskets loaded, facing out. The boats were still being boarded, mountains of luggage pushed aside, left behind, now gathered for use as barriers. There was a stream of boats already heading out, a line disappearing into the distance, going through the Guardian's legs as she stood guard. Every ship in the entire harbor had been used, and most were already gone. Two huge barges crafted of blue and green Luxon and wood had been constructed and were already heading out too. That left one Luxon barge that was rapidly filling even now, with far too many men to fit in it. The soldiers here were locals mostly. Where the hell had all the Rutgari soldiers gone? Boarded earlier ships, no doubt. Someone would pay for that, but not now. The soldiers who remained looked resolute, and their countenances lifted as they saw Gavin. These were men who thought they were going to die to give their families a chance to get away. Men who were willing to pay that price.
Who's in charge?
I am, sir! Lord Prism, sir!
A mousy Rutgari with oddly kinky hair for his pale complexion and a look in his eyes like he was scared to death stepped forward. In another time, Gavin would have laughed to see the awkward little man.
We've got almost all the ships we have loaded. Men gathered who'll fight. We need room for another 300 if no one else comes from the city.
Any sign of General Danavis or Commander Iron Fist?
No, sir, Lord Prism, sir.
Sir is fine. Blackguards, any of you who can draft without breaking the halo, help me. We'll make one more barge while we wait.
Wait, sir.
General Danavis is coming. We finish one more barge, then we go. He'll be here by then.
Enemy coming! Ready!
Can you hold while we make a barge?
The man was still small, still mousy, but his face was resolute, and anything comical about his appearance was gone.
We'll hold, sir, to the last man!
Kara selected one of the Miraman's horses that looked like it still had some wind and spirit left. Its barding was mirrored, and it shone in the morning sun. She might as well paint a target on her back. Well, she wasn't exactly inconspicuous herself. They didn't have long. The 400 paces between Lord Omnichrome's color whites could only be crossed through a maze of alleys or rubble-strewn streets. It would slow them, but not much. Some things, though, had to be done. Karis moved to checking Hardle's body, gritting her teeth against the gore. He was definitely dead. She felt a peculiar emptiness. She'd wanted him dead. He deserved it. Now, he was just gone. and quite possibly, it hadn't accomplished anything. She saw her beach wand on the ground next to him.
Son of a bitch.
She picked it up and scanned the ground, but there was no sight of her Attigan. No more time. Corvin Danavis's men were finishing collecting gunpowder and shot, or replacement weapons, from the dead and forming back up. Kip looked as bad as Karis would have expected.
It's called being light sick, Kip, and it might do anything to you. Make you feel weak as a puppy or strong as a sea demon. I've seen modest men tear off all their clothes because they couldn't bear anything touching their skin. And shy women, well, never mind.
Hey, that was just the one time.
I don't know that I'd call you shy on any day, Karis White Oak. Certainly not today.
Karis followed Corvin's eyes. Oops. She'd managed to tear the slit in her dress practically to her hip, and sitting on a horse didn't help. Well, what was she going to do? Go change?
Time's up! We head for the docks! Catch up or die!
That left Karis with Kip. She would prefer to be unencumbered during a battle, but she wasn't going to abandon him, not again. There were things more important than her freedom. She saddled her horse over to the platform. Obviously dazed, Kip clambered up. At first, Karis thought they were going to get away cleanly. Then they came to the bridge. The far end was blocked with wagons and carts that must have been set on fire moments before Corvin's men arrived, or they would have seen the smoke. The men at the front of the column skidded to a stop, and the men who'd been running behind them collided with them, collapsing the column and causing chaos. Corvin, mounted near the front, was trying to extricate some drafters from the crush to get them to work on clearing the flaming barricades. It would only take a minute or two, in normal circumstances. Near to the back of the column, Karis pulled up sharply.
Halt! Form up rear guard! Load muskets! Affix matches!
Karis wheeled around in time to see the first of the color whites pursuing them. She'd known green whites could change their joints to give their legs immense springiness, but the greens weren't the only color whites leaping from roof to roof behind them. A yellow white, limbs all aglow, ran straight toward the edge of a flat roof, gathering Luxon in both hands. She leapt off the edge and threw her hands down, releasing a jet of yellow at the ground, using the recoil to throw her up high enough to make it to the next roof. Like she was playing leapfrog in midair. A flash of green, much closer. Kara shot a ball of green up, intercepting the green white as it descended. Her shot blasted the green white off its trajectory, lifting it so that instead of landing among the terrified soldiers, it collided with the side of a building. The soldiers around it recovered before the white did. Veterans would have dispatched it with their blades, saving precious shots for more active enemies. Another green white streaked through the air, and Karis missed it. Others, terrified, leveled their muskets and fired. Most of them missing the white and hitting their own friends. By the time they put that one down, whites of every color were converging on them. Lord Omnichrome's army was rounding a corner, not 300 paces away, jogging, picking up speed for a charge. Half a dozen of Omnichrome's red and subred drafters were mounted. They closed within 200 paces and lobbed great flaming missiles toward Corvin's masked, trapped men. A blue-white, all glittering angles and blades, was the next across the rooftops to the left. A subred was leaping across roofs on the right, bald, his whole body literally aflame. Out of nowhere, a big drafter dropped into the street straight in front of Karis, his back to Corvin's men. He stood, arms spread out as if he were holding ropes and expecting a heavy load. His arms snapped out just as the blue-white and sub-red-white leapt to attack. Both color whites jerked hard as the invisible super-violet Luxon ropes around their necks went taut. The blue-white's body went abruptly horizontal, all the Luxon it had held going to jelly in an instant as it lost concentration. It crashed to the ground in front of the rear guard. The sub-red white, without the benefit of blue armor around her neck, barely changed directions. Her body landed on the next roof and fell, and her flaming head rolled right into the river. The drafter who'd saved them shot a glance back, making sure the color whites were dead. It took Karis's breath away. It was Yusef Tep, the Purple Bear himself, the hero of the False Prisoners' War. Even as Karras registered the fact, she saw the flaming missiles that were arcing toward the rear guard suddenly veer left and right in the air, exploding at a safe distance. Another green-white she hadn't even seen crashed into the ground, riddled with blue Luxon and knives. Karras saw Alella Korzen, skin luminous blue, step out of an alley.
We've got your backs! Go!
Karras turned to see at least a dozen drafters stand on the last rooftop. It was like Karras had stepped into a hero's gallery. The woman who'd yelled was Samila Seya. Dee Dee Fallingleaf stood next to her, skin wrapped in vines of pure green Luxon. Flamehand stood on the corner of the building, a steady stream of fireballs popping from each hand. Sisters Tala and Tayri to the right. Talon Gim, bleeding heavily, left arm useless, but going to stand beside Yusef Tep in the street. And others that Karras recognized from her youth, and who'd fought for Dazen, and whom she'd heard described in vivid detail.
Damn you! You and that boy are the only ones who can save Gavin! Take him and get the hell out of here!
Corvin's men surged as the barricades gave way. Karras felt Kip stirring behind her. Lord Omnicrone's army was like an onrushing tide. Karras spurred her horse on, only shooting glances back at the magical conflagration behind her. It was enough. All of Corvin's men made it over the bridge. From there, it was a straight adrenaline-fueled shot to the docks.